Hey there, welcome back to the Etsy Seller Podcast. I'm your host, Cody McGuffey, and today we have a very special episode where we're joined by a friend of mine, Kate Hayes, who is very well known in the Etsy selling community. She is known for her thoughtful approach to teaching something. She's known for her faith in her business mixed together. She's known for absolutely crushing it in the business world, specifically on Etsy and helping a lot of other people do it. Very fun episode. Kate shares how she, at one point when she was selling on Etsy, made over $70,000 in 30 days selling a handmade product, and how that experience shaped her business career into something that is very, very special. She shares that story. We dive into that, dive into mindsets, a lot of other tactical things when it comes to selling on Etsy. Very cool episode. I'm very grateful for Kate coming on and sharing her time with us, sharing her knowledge with us. I believe that a lot of you will get a lot of value out of this. So take notes in this one. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Everbee. And we believe that everyone deserves the opportunity to pursue their passions and live life on their own terms. We believe in making e-commerce accessible to everyone in the world, no matter where you are, what situation you're in, what your financial obligations are. We believe that you can do it and you can use e-commerce to make a positive impact on your family and in your community. Everbee is the e-commerce business tool that helps e-commerce sellers find winning products, optimize their listings, grow their business, follow trends. So if you're an Etsy seller, you need to be using Everbee. If you're an e-commerce seller who sells on Shopify or Wix or WooCommerce, you should be using Everbee. Sign up for free, everbee.io. Let's jump into today's show. Kate, what's up? How are you?
Hey, good. So excited to be here. Excited to chat all things Etsy and business. So yeah, pumped about the conversation today.
Same. I know we were talking a little bit before. Your family, your life, where you live, all the good stuff. You obviously have an awesome YouTube channel full of a bunch of free value content, all this stuff about Etsy. We're excited to like dive in and honestly extract as much value selfishly as possible from you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
For those who don't know you, would you mind like kind of sharing your story a little bit?
Of course. Yeah. So I started back on Etsy in 2015. And well, actually I started an Etsy shop before that, which I like to share because my main shop was started in 2015, but I did try Etsy a little bit before that, like a year or two earlier. And it was a complete like flop from the beginning. It was just no strategy, no tactics of any sort, like just kind of hopping on there. I had a friend that had originally told me about Etsy and she was selling jewelry on Etsy. And I thought, I've always been creative, you know, like I've always been like an artsy kind of person that likes to like make different things. And it would be cool to like sell some things and make some money from it. So I tried Etsy and it was just a nightmare. Like I didn't get any sales for a long time. And then out of the blue, I got a sale one day on a random product. My whole shop was just filled of like random things. And I got a sale and it totally caught me off guard. And it was a physical product that I had to ship, but I hadn't thought about how I was going to ship it if I ever did get a sale. And so I didn't have the right size box. I didn't have any packaging materials. And I remember there was a day where I like ran around all the stores in my town, like that I could think of that might have shipping boxes to like try to find the right size box for this thing. And I could not find anything that would be the right size. And so it was just a whole, like, I think I ended up like piecing together like an old recycled box of some sort that I had and like including a note that was like, so sorry about the situation. It was terrible. So after that, I kind of just gave up for a while. And I just assumed Etsy wasn't my thing, you know. And then come 2015, I was working two different jobs at the time. And I had a toddler son. I had just had my newborn daughter. And so I really was like wanting to find something where I could stay home with them. And so Etsy kind of was in the back of my mind, but it was just such a bad experience the first time around. And so I started selling things like locally, like on Facebook groups and local craft fairs and things like that. And it was I think it was my mother-in-law that at one point like saw I was having a little bit of success locally. And she said, why don't you try to sell these things online? And I was like, no, been there, done that. It was a terrible experience. I don't think the online thing is for me. And she kind of pushed me to like try it again. And so that's when I did get back on Etsy. But I decided this time, like I need to really research and figure out what I'm doing if I'm going to try to make this work. So thankfully I was able to get some strategy through some research and at least piece things together enough to kind of go a whole different direction with it the second time, which ended up working, thankfully. So that was kind of how I got started. It was just sort of a trial and error sort of thing. And I was just really desperate to be able to stay home with my kids and my husband as much as possible. So yeah, that's kind of how I started.
I love it. It's exactly how you would, it's like the entrepreneurial story, right? That we hear like in movies or in books or on YouTube occasionally. And like you just, you have this dream, you kind of like throw it up there and just like you get a sale and you kind of have to figure it out. What's interesting is that you didn't really use that momentum at the time as like an encouragement. You actually used it as like a detractor, actually pulled you away from it for a little while, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Would you recommend that people just do what you did and like just, hey, just throw up your listing, just figure it out if you get a sale? Or would you recommend someone's like, hey, figure out how you're going to do the shipping and all the systems in place on the back end? What would you recommend to somebody?
I think it's a balance, because I think you can kind of go too far in one direction or the other. I definitely think it's wise to do some research ahead of time and to go into it with a game plan and to know kind of what you're doing instead of just randomly throwing things up and like hoping that they stick or, you know, that you make some sales. But I've also seen people that get stuck kind of in that analysis phase of like researching, consuming all this content on it, and they never take action to actually put anything out there. And then that's also like not going to help you, because there comes a point where no matter how prepared you feel or not, you have to just put some things out there and see what works and what doesn't.
Totally agree with that. For some context for anybody listening to this, I personally know more about you than probably a lot of people listening, or maybe some people listening. You have been in Etsy for a while. One, you started out early on, and then you eventually hit some strides. Like fast forwarding to today, you have multiple six-figure shops. How does that even, maybe can you walk us through any of that?
Yeah,
anything you're willing to share?
Yeah. So I kind of just started like by not putting a lot of research into it, and then eventually started looking up and just kind of thinking there must be some way that these people who have been successful on Etsy are doing this. And so there were some like free YouTube videos and things. There weren't many like courses or anything out at that time that I can remember ever coming across. So it was more just like sort of piecemealing like random free content. Like it was YouTube videos and blogs I was reading, different things from people who had been there. And I think I was able to, like, it would have been much nicer at that point to like have a system that I could just implement. But at that point, I couldn't really find anything like that. So I did sort of just piecemeal enough to figure out how I needed to focus in on a specific niche. I needed to figure out, instead of just like throwing up random things, like what people really wanted, what was in demand currently, and also taking inspiration from looking at what other people were doing on the platform and kind of changing it to make it my own and make it unique and make it better, you know? And so there was a lot of research and strategy that ended up going into like how my shop developed over the years. But, and I think there was a lot that went into it. You know, we can talk about like SEO and photography and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, for me, I think what was the turning point really was when I realized I could start paying attention to trends and things that were really popular at the time. And instead of just making things the way that I liked them, my style and the colors and the patterns and the things that I personally loved, which I had been doing, which again is not terrible. I wanted myself to be in my brand. You know, I didn't want to make something I didn't enjoy making, but at the same time, I did start to do more research in terms of trends and paying attention to the best sellers on the platform. Why are these specific things selling really well right now? What could I do that I could take inspiration and put my own twist on it and make it better? Maybe offer different like personalization options or things like that, that I kind of added some layers into my listings that made them, I think, a little bit more appealing. And at that point, the traction kind of started. And that's what I always say with Etsy is like, once you can get some of that like initial traction, the momentum can really carry you with the search. So that's kind of what happened, is I finally, like through a lot of trial and error, just put out some things that end up becoming bestsellers. And I think that momentum really drove my whole shop to then kind of take it to that next level of success.
That's amazing. And I have a very similar story with our own shop too, my wife and I's. Very similar story. We all have like, there's typically like a peak, right, in our journey. Sometimes we're in it right now, and sometimes typically not, right? We like look back on it and be like, that was our peak. What was like the biggest peak for you, like revenue wise or anything that you're willing to share?
Yeah. So I think every time I put out a product that became a bestseller, like surely not everything we put out became a bestseller, but there have been a handful over the years that were like huge bestsellers. And those were all peaks. You know, as soon as you put out something and it really gets that momentum, that becomes a peak. And that it's usually like that one listing or like, you know, it'll bleed over a little bit into your other products too, but that one listing really takes off. And so I had my first like bestseller kind of peak with one product that was a home decor product that we put out there, did really well. And then I thought that was like the best it could get. But then it was like a year or two later, we put out another thing. And that was when we made $70,000 in 30 days. And it was just like mind blowing. The orders just like kept coming in every day. And it was where you just sit back and you're looking at your, you know, list of orders. And it's just like, when is this ever going to stop? It was crazy. And so that was definitely like our peak up until that point. And we really were not prepared for that as far as like filling, because those were physical.
Because you're handmade.
We were having to create and fill ourselves. And we didn't have a team at the time. It was just me and my husband. And so it was literally like sun up to sundown, like every day, both of us just like packaging, filling, creating orders. But that was just so crazy. And that's, I think at that point is when I really realized like what was possible. For sure.
Can you take us to that moment, like dive in deeper? What were the conversations that you and your husband were having at the time? I mean, this is unreal, right? And I know from my experience too, it's like, whoa, whoa, hey, another one, ding, ding, ding. It's like, it becomes a game.
Yeah, it was like the best feeling, but at the same time, like, what are we going to do? Because we really didn't know how to fill all of these and get them in. We wanted to keep up with our processing time that we had promised people. These are going to be shipped within a week or two, you know, whatever it was at the time. And it was like, our conversations were a lot like, do we need to just change our processing time and put it way out? But we knew that was going to slow down the orders. Or do we just like, do we raise our prices to slow down the orders? Or do we not want them to slow down and we just like dig in and make it happen? And that's what we decided. I was like, I want to like keep this momentum. And so we just, thankfully he was working from home at the time. And this was my full-time thing at that point. So really like all day, like we took over our whole living room. We set up a packaging station. I taught him how to package the things. And I was like, you're on packaging duty from like this time to this time. And like, literally our kids were like in the middle of, it was chaos, but it was like the best feeling ever too.
That's like, sounds to me like a very defining moment probably in your entrepreneurial journey, right? Like probably that phase of time.
Yeah, it was like so scrappy, you know, it's like, I think everybody has to have that moment that just feels really scrappy. Like we don't have the team, we don't have any fancy like equipment or anything going on, but we're going to like hustle and get this done. And not that I recommend you live your whole entrepreneur journey like that, you know, but I do think that having those kind of moments are very defining and they help you kind of clarify and figure out where you want to go with it.
I completely agree with you. I don't think everybody has to have that defining moment quite like that, but I think that it's more often than we think. It happened for sure for my wife and I. Same thing. We were digging in hard and we had those same thoughts of like, should we raise prices? Should we like do like processing time? Should you just like, let's just get a back order and just, let's just figure it out. And I remember getting the supplies was hard for us when we had that moment, like getting the supplies. So we were running to like every fabric store.
Yeah, we were too.
It was crazy. Yeah. And we just felt like nobody would had enough of anything. We were just buying like everything from everybody. We were paying premiums for things and buying things from eBay for fabric versus like, it wasn't normal. And it was
the same thing. You just get your supplies from where you can get them from to just fill the orders, you know?
That's so cool. And I think that I'm hoping, and I believe that somebody listening to the story is maybe in this phase right now. That's what we hope. And if they're not, they're getting ready to come into this phase, I believe. Yeah. People are wondering right now that are not in this phase quite yet, how do you make that happen? Like if Kate could like, could she replicate that?
Right.
And if she could, or if I could, like what advice would you give to them?
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely think it's possible with some smart strategy. So I have kind of looked back on that time and dissected like what really made that happen. And I think it boils down to what I kind of touched on before, which was really paying attention to like before we put that one product out, I really thought to myself, I'm going to do some research. I'm not just going to make what I like, but I'm going to look at trends and even more than just what articles are saying, you know, these things are trending, but look at what's selling on the platform for other people, not so that I can copy them and make the exact same thing and like try to sell it too, but so that I can take inspiration from color schemes and patterns and different things that I see that are like over and over again in multiple listings. These are selling really well. And then I know I have a unique style and I have a unique perspective and a twist that I can put on it to make it better. And so I ended up for that specific one, kind of taking some inspiration from those things, color schemes, patterns, different like materials that I saw people using, but changing a few different elements to make it unique and make it my own with things that I thought actually would sell really well. And then also incorporating a way for buyers to customize it further. So we actually ended up learning a whole new technique for what we were doing to be able to offer customization and personalization in a way that we hadn't been before. And I think that's a huge bonus on Etsy when sellers can offer some type of customization or personal, or even if it's just a few options that the buyer can choose what color they want or a certain initial letter that they want or a certain shape or something, you know, it's like, just enough to be able to give them a say in what their product is. And that's one reason why people love shopping on Etsy as opposed to other platforms is because the sellers a lot of times are willing to work with the buyer, let them customize things. So I think adding that little extra layer into the product that was already trending that we kind of made better in our opinion, all of that together with like the right price point, we did research on our pricing, being able to offer free shipping, it kind of just all worked together to, I think, make a really like bestseller potential product.
I love that. What are some key things that I know that you've obviously used Everbee over the years that we've known each other. A lot of times we have people, or sometimes people are listening to this right now and they're not quite sure, like they haven't got to that like technical phase of doing that market research, that trend research. So we're always trying to, it's like an uphill battle constantly. We're always trying to educate people on like how to actually have a data mindset. And obviously you have to mix that with the creative mindset. And then you have to mix this thing of like, well, you can't copy either. So don't copy. So it's like this trifecta thing. For someone that's new to Everbee, new to listening to this right now, how would you recommend them kind of use this data and how they should even look at it?
Yeah. Well, I think there's so many great tools with Everbee. There's so many different ways that you can use it. But one of my favorite things to do is you can just go on there with the Chrome extension onto Etsy and literally just type in something on Etsy you're thinking of. So if it was like baby blankets, you know, you're thinking about selling like personalized baby blankets or something, you could type that phrase into the Etsy search bar. And then if you have the Everbee extension, you can look at all the different data from the listings that are coming up that are using that phrase for their product. So you can compare things like the top listings revenue that they're bringing in each month. You can look at search volume, all these different things to see, is this a good keyword phrase that people are actually searching for and wanting? And if it is, take a look at those top listings that are like best sellers for that type of product and take clues. I love the phrase that success leaves clues. So we're looking at successful listings and taking clues from what we can do and take inspiration from and not feel like we have to reinvent the wheel every time. I think that's something that sometimes we can, as creatives, we can think like, how can I come up with a totally like brand new thing that like I have it in my brain, everybody's going to love it. But if it's a brand new thing, how are people going to even know to search for it? You know, so not to say that you can never come up with a completely brand new like invention for something. I think there is a place for that. But there a lot of times if you're just trying to make income on Etsy, it's totally okay to take something that's already working and not reinvent the wheel and just put your own spin on it. Look at what is trending, look at what's currently selling and think to yourself, how can I put a unique selling point on this? Like, how can I introduce something extra to this type of product that's going to just take it up to the next level and make it more of an appealing offer?
So, add value, right?
Yeah, that's the way I do that kind of like trend and product research. And there are tools like Everbee that are so helpful in doing that. You know, I didn't use Everbee in the very, I don't even know if Everbee was around when I first
started. Everbee wasn't around at that time. Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. So I, for the first few years, I was not using anything. I was just doing that kind of searching on Etsy, like really scrappy, really organic.
Which you could totally do. Still today, you can do this, right?
The people can really do. But it's almost like the next level when you have these kind of tools that can help you really see the data too.
Totally same. And when we had like our breakout year on Etsy too, where we did like $300,000 in like 1 year, which was, that was like our peak on Etsy, and which was so special, but there was no tools, or we didn't use any tools to make that happen. So you don't need these tools, but you need to have the same mindset that these tools would kind of give you. It's just a little slower way of doing it, but you could totally do it. just faster, different, like a different level, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
You said personalization and customization, things like this, unique differentiation points. How does someone, people listening to this right now, they come across a listing and they're just like, this is in my niche. I'm very excited to sell something like this. I can make that. I can make it even a little bit better, I believe, but I don't know how to do it without copying them. Like they're 90% copy of 95%. How can they make it their own? What strategy, what mindset do you use in order to make sure that they are making it their own?
Right. Yeah. So I think that it really depends what type of product you're selling, because there's such a wide variety of different types of products. You could be selling physical or digital or print on demand. There's so many different things. So the answer to that kind of depends on the type of product you're selling. But in general, I like to think of style elements or like trend elements. So things like I mentioned before, like color schemes or patterns, or even for jewelry, like different types of hardware, or if it's digital, different font types, different types of graphic elements that you're using. There are so many different like little things that make up the whole product, right? So it's looking at all those little trend elements or style elements or materials that you're using, looking at each and every little part of your product and saying like, how could I like maybe differ that one thing a little bit? Like if it's a digital product, you could look at the font that you're using and use a more trending font than the one that you saw on that listing, or offer those type of customization options, offer different types of fonts for your customers to give them choices, you know. But it's really just kind of looking at every little piece and thinking, how could I either change that to something different that would be more appealing to my target customer? So it really depends on your target customer as well. Who you have to have in mind when you're creating your products. But you could also add things, additional things. Like I said, for us, we added on a personalization option when a lot of the competing listings didn't have that option. So it's either just tweaking things a little bit or adding on additional options. And it's not just for the product itself, but I'd say it's also for the listing. So like I mentioned with the price point and the free shipping, and even things that make your listing more appealing, not the product itself, but the listing. So leveling up your photography, the images that you're using, all of that goes into making a whole offer very like irresistible for a buyer.
I love that. I wanted to ask you, you talked about digital too, and I know we haven't touched on that yet, but I do want to go deeper on digital, if you don't mind. How often would you recommend a seller kind of dip their toes in the digital space? And then what types of digital products should they be selling and why?
Yeah. So I think that digital is great for people, even if you're already selling a physical product, to like add on as an additional revenue stream, because especially if you're choosing a type of digital product that can eventually become passive, it's not taking up a lot more of your time, like in the long run. In the short run, it will, because you're kind of in the foundation laying, you know, when you're having to actually create these products. But there are a lot of types of digital products that you can create once and then set them to sell on repeat without you having to fill any more orders. It's just an instant download. So those type of digital products work really well as like an added on revenue stream. So you can still sell your physical product, but add this on to make some additional income. Some people only want to sell digital products, which is great too. You can just kind of dive in and create a whole digital products business. So it really depends on what your interest is and what you like, what you want to do for your products. But I think that I just love digital because like I know the hardship of the physical product side, because that's what we did for so long, and just the hustle and the physical labor part of that goes in and storing inventory, all of this, which maybe you love, you know, and if you love that, that's great. That's probably your thing, you know, but if you're at the point where you're sort of burnt out with that, then digital is a really fun and different kind of way to go that you could explore. And as far as types, I mean, it really depends again on what you enjoy. There's anything from like creating a custom branding package for someone, which is more like active work. It's not as passive as some would be, but maybe you really enjoy working one-on-one with clients and getting their vision for what they want their branding to be. And then you create that specific like custom package just for that client. So that's a more like one-on-one active work kind of thing. But then there's passive products as well, like creating Canva templates that people can use, creating wall art that's just an instant download. People can just purchase it, print it out instantly and put it up on their wall. There's just so many different types of great digital products. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
I am too, to be honest.
It's just great for passive revenue.
I agree with you. And it is literally like a super, super high margin, typically lower cost or lower average order value, of course, but the benefits are like it's 80%, you know, profit margin at the end of the day. Would you recommend a specific price point to like stay within for a successful digital type of product line? For example, SVGs, you know, PNGs, like images and stuff. I know I did that, you know, a few years ago. And it was like $1, $2, $4 listings max, probably, right? But then there's like templates, there's planners, there's more complex stuff that sell for like $20, $25, $30, that range. And that's a beautiful business, in my opinion. Yeah. I wasn't that creative person to like design that, so I never dipped there. But with Everbee, I see this stuff all the time. I'm just like, wow, look at that product. That is insane. Yeah. What do you recommend typically?
Yeah, I think, again, it's such a wide range of different types of products. So really, I would recommend starting with some market research and seeing what other people, the competing listings that are similar to what you're wanting to sell, what those are selling for, because it's always a good idea to sort of be in the reasonable range of like what everyone is selling it for. You never really want to be like the highest priced or the lowest priced. So I always start with like a ballpark range with what I'm seeing from market research, but then also thinking about the time that you're putting into it, what you want to make back for your time, and also any costs. I mean, with digital, there's hardly any cost, but you're paying probably for some kind of software to create in. Maybe you're paying for some service that gives you like certain graphic elements or things like that. Mm. So thinking about your cost that goes into it, your time. And really, some people work on a formula. I don't really have a specific formula for pricing. I just look at what I want to make for my time, covering my costs, if I'm having to pay anything for, you know, help with anything, just thinking of everything I'm having to pay out and the profit I want to make back. But again, there's just such a wide range. Like you said, you could be selling digital stickers for like 50 cents each, or you could be selling a custom branding package for $300. Both of those are considered digital products. If it was me, I would probably shoot for bundling some things together. If you have lower priced items, creating some listings that are bundles, because those sell really well and it increases your order value. But I don't think there's anything wrong with either of those price points. Just knowing that if you have a lower price point, you're going to have to be depending on a higher volume of orders to make the profit and the revenue that you want to make. Whereas if you have something like a $300 custom package, maybe you only have to sell one of those a month or two of those a month to make what you want for that month. So It's kind of across the board with that.
You have a cool, I think I saw this somewhere. We haven't talked about it, but your husband was working a corporate job and now he doesn't. Is that the story? Can you walk us through that story?
Yeah. So he had a corporate job. Well, he's had several over the years, and he was actually laid off in 2020 with everything that went on. And so at that point, we kind of were deciding, should he try to find something else, or should my business was like starting to take off a little bit more at that point. I mean, it had already taken off to an extent, but we had also gotten on YouTube at that point. We were starting to coach people at that point. And so it was like, well, there might be enough potential here for you to just stay home with me and do the business and really invest in that and try to grow it together. And so that's what we decided to do instead of him like trying to find something else. And it just all worked out. And I give all glory to the Lord for that, because I just feel like he was behind every step of leading our path in that way. But he stayed home with me, and we're like, you know what, we're going to like dig into this business. We're going to start coaching people and really digging into our YouTube channel and even going further with Etsy. And so all of that together, we just sort of like tag teamed. And so he's been kind of by my side this whole time and still is home, and we're working on everything together. So
that's amazing. Yeah. So congratulations, Kate, on that.
Thank you. I'm so thankful for it.
I bet. And I know that I am too, personally, with my family and I, similar. And I'm just so grateful for that opportunity. And I think that a lot of people listening to this, they're trying to design their life to be similar to that, where they are set up to have options, where your husband could go get a job. He could go work if he wanted to. He's just choosing not to in this case, right? And that's a beautiful, beautiful, powerful position to be in, where you have the option.
Yeah.
It's very special. Yeah. I wanted to ask you this before, well, we kind of skipped through it. What was your two jobs that you're working, like high level, whatever you're willing to share? Like, what were you doing? So people can understand like what your skill sets were, what were you doing in your life in order to kind of get to this point?
Yeah. So I've worked a lot of different things over the years. At that point, I was working both with a missions organization. So it was like, acting drama ministry kind of stuff. And then I was also a kids acting coach. So I was kind of like going back and forth between the two. I've always done acting and theater and things like that in my past. And so that's kind of what my first like career path was with that, which I loved those jobs. They weren't, you know, you hear a lot of stories of people that are just in these jobs that they hate and they need to get out of. It wasn't like that for me. I loved those jobs. It was honestly just trying to balance them both with two young kids and feeling like I was never at home, and my husband had his job and we were missing each other. Our schedules were totally off. So it was more just I needed to get home and be with them. But those were the jobs I had at the time. So I feel like I had always been a creative person, but it was taking sort of a different outlet. But, you know, in my free time, I was still like creating my home decor pieces for my own house, like making mm-hmm. signs and doing different things, like making jewelry. So,
were you a business person?
I had those skill sets. Do I?
Were you like a business person? Like, did you sell things before? Have you ever?
Yes. Like, okay. I've always had that like entrepreneur kind of bug in me, you know, that like, even when as a kid, I would like create these little friendship bracelets and sell them, or do like lemonade stands and things like that. So yeah, I've always had that kind of bent.
Why do you think you have that? Why do you think, was that born inside of you? Was that from your parents? Where'd that come from?
I feel like it was maybe both. I think that I definitely think it's something that God placed inside of me, but I also feel like my parents were really good at encouraging it as I was growing up. And so they did help me a lot of times do those little like lemonade stands, or, you know, they never told me I couldn't do something. Like, they always encouraged that, like, yeah, you want to try to sell that jewelry? Like, we'll go around to the neighbors. And I was a Girl Scout, so I sold cookies. You know, we like went around to the neighbors' houses. And so I'm super thankful that I had parents that encouraged that in me. So I think it was kind of both, and just being able to like flex that muscle a little bit as I was growing up, and being able to see, like, even as a kid, like, oh, this is fun to be able to make something and people want to buy it and I can make money from it, you know? So I feel like it was kind of a mixture.
You have a cool, I would call it an integration, those are my words, of faith and business and money and family. Like, this is cool integration, which is very similar in our household. I would say, like, a lot of people that I do know, or maybe some people that I do know, they kind of start compartmentalizing these things into different categories, like faith, and that's like that. And there's like money, okay, this is this, and now I'm the family, and this is this. And they don't really like let the overlap happen in between. Mm-hmm. And, I believe what's worked for us is the integration between all these things. Mm-hmm. And I kind of resist using the word balance, because I don't know if balance is the right word for these things. Integration is my word. How would you describe, is that, do you agree with how I described your kind of setup? Is that how you guys are set up?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, just from the very beginning of starting our business, we always wanted to dedicate it to the Lord, because our whole life revolves around our relationship with God. And so I know not everyone is like that, but we are like that. And so I can't do anything that's not like authentically me, you know? So I knew going into any kind of business that it's all about, it is about the business, but it's also about us doing this together as a family. And it's also about giving glory to the Lord, where He's provided things that we could have never in our own strength. He's given us strategy and the things that we've implemented to make things work. And He's brought in customers and sales. And so I never want to present it like it's this formula. Like, if you, you know,
pray five times,
you know, it's never like that. But I just can't not integrate it, because it's just part of who I am, and it's part of who our family is. And so this whole time has been a family business. It's been us authentically who we are. And I do believe that God's blessed it. And so that's all I can say is that that's how we sort of choose to operate things.
I very much agree. I very much agree with this, but I think that's why I like to talk about it. It's a little uncomfortable probably for somebody listening to this, because mixing money and faith is typically, at least in my world that I've seen in the past, with people, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, that person is like super wealthy. And this, you know, it's like this weird thing where like you can't have both. And my wife and I, we're always kind of teaching our kids and our brothers and siblings and nephews and nieces of like, you can have both.
Yeah.
In fact, you should have both. Like, you should have wealth, prosperity, and you should have a deep relationship with whatever your beliefs are. And, I think it serves you. I think it serves us. I think it actually amplifies your journey, which is the coolest part about it.
Yeah, I do too. I think that at least my viewpoint is money is here to do good in the world, right? So we want, there's going to be money in the hands of somebody. Why not in the hands of good people who have good morals, who will use it for good things, and they have values? You know, it's like, I would rather the money be in the world, be in those people's hands. So it is, I feel like it is kind of taboo. Sometimes people don't understand how they work together, or they don't, we've been taught that you're not, if you're a very spiritual person, you're not supposed to have wealth. And you're
not allowed to have that. It's selfish all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. And I see it, and I've had to kind of retrain myself, because I was sort of brought up that way as well, but retraining myself to think, well, you know what, if someone's going to have wealth, like, I would rather have it and use it for good. And I feel like God wants people that he can trust to have wealth, to use it for good in the world. And so, again, I don't see it as this like formula thing of like, if you do this, you'll get this. But I do believe he blesses people, and he entrusts things to people he knows will use it for the right purposes. And if you have little and you're faithful with little, you can expect to be blessed with more and to be faithful with more, you know? And so to me, it's like a stewardship thing. And I don't think that there's any reason why someone who is working hard on their business, who's doing everything right, you know, that like, that they should feel guilty about being blessed or having wealth. You know, I just don't think that that's the right thing. I completely agree.
Although it is more challenging than we'd like to say for some reason. Because we think that money makes somebody worse, and which is partially true, depending if they're a bad person to begin with. Right. So,
money to me is neutral. Like, it's not a good or a bad thing. It's whose hands the money is in, you know?
So. It's an amplifier of who you already are. So if you're a great person, you have 10 times the more money, you will be 10 times probably the person that you are today, because you will just be 10 times more giving. You'll be more generous. You will just like care more about certain things. If you're a bad person, you have little money, then you'll be that. And then if you have like a lot of money, you're going to probably be probably evil person. I mean, right. That's typically how it works. And thank you for sharing that. That's cool. I know it's like uncomfortable probably for some people to talk about, but how do you describe entrepreneur? Like, is it a full-time entrepreneur to be labeled as an entrepreneur? Can you have a side hustle and be an entrepreneur? How would you describe that?
Yeah. I mean, I think entrepreneur can take a lot of different forms. So I don't know that it's defined by full-time or side hustle. I think it can be either. To me, entrepreneur is someone who has it in their, like almost in their bones, you know, like we have this drive to build something and to want to create something that's going to serve other people, but also be effective financially and be able to, you know, a lot of us have this desire to have financial freedom, to provide for our families, to have financial freedom, which again, I don't think is a bad thing. I think that's totally right to want to be able to provide for your family and to be free. And so to me, that's kind of entrepreneurship is all of that. And a lot of us are creative as well. So most entrepreneurs are wanting to think about how can I use my creativity or my ideas to do good in the world, to serve other people, and to be able to make money from it and be financially free. And so to me, it's kind of all wrapped up in that. And that can take a lot of forms. It can take the form of people wanting to create products to sell online. It can be people that want to create a service-based business that serves people in a specific way that they feel gifted in. It can be somebody that wants to create a business that just for the purpose of investing in someone else's business because you're inspired by someone else, you know? And so it takes so many different forms, but at the root of it and the heart of it, I think, is someone who is creative, who's passionate about creating something new, doing something new, and being able to like make financial income from that and be free. So that's kind of how I view it.
I love it. Do you think that you sound like you were born with it a little bit, and whether you say you're born with it or maybe your parents influenced it, whatever, it was a very early age. Do you think that somebody that doesn't have that history of being entrepreneurial, could they be an entrepreneur still? Can they like, is it a skill that they can like learn and a muscle that they can flex and get stronger?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you have any desire towards that, you already have it a little bit in you. Even if you don't feel like it's in you, if the desire is there, it is in you, you know? And so it's, even if you didn't have parents who helped you when you were growing up to kind of flex that muscle, it's never too late to start on your own, to just start trying and put something out there. And chances are, if you're like listening to this podcast right now, you're probably already really well on your way to getting there. So it just takes a little bit of trial and error and not being afraid to just try something. And there, I can tell you that probably all of us that have any success online with businesses have had failures as well, like many failures probably along the way. I know we have, and we've had to try different things. We've had to pivot and change. And so it's just learning how to put it out there, like imperfect action, don't be afraid of the mess and being scrappy at times, because it won't always be like that, but you'll learn along the way. So I definitely think someone can kind of pick it up and just start to explore that a little bit.
I completely agree. I struggle with this a little bit, where there's a phase in my life where I was like learning about entrepreneurship when I was becoming an entrepreneur myself. And I was like, oh yeah, I think I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. It seems like it's kind of like, I'm very interested and attracted to these things, but I had a corporate full-time job also. And then as soon as I started learning more about it, pretty soon I have this mindset of like every single person should be an entrepreneur. I had this, like, I was like almost like teaching it. And I wasn't even one yet. I was like, almost like, you guys should do this too. We should do this together. And then I got a lot of pushback from family, friends that they're like, that's cool for you, but like, that doesn't sound cool to me. And so then I went to this phase of, oh, maybe not everybody is built to be an entrepreneur, self-reliant entrepreneur, founder, builder, creative. But now I'm at this phase where I think that everybody should probably have something going for themselves separate from their corporate job. Where do you fall in that camp? Do you feel like everybody should have something at some point, or just not for everybody?
Yeah. I mean, I personally think it's wise to have something to be able to fall back on in case something were to happen with your corporate job. But I don't know that, like, I would go as far to say like everyone should be an entrepreneur. I think that there might be some people who could do like a side hustle, you know, that it's like almost like the mom that has a job, she has kids at home, she can't do much more than like her full-time job right now. But maybe in the few hours a week she has free, if she's like a creative person, maybe she could create some designs for print on demand or something, you know, like just whatever she could do with her capacity and the season of life she's in. So I would never want to put pressure on someone to say like, everyone should do this the way I'm doing it. But I do think it's smart to have something on the side, even if it's just on the side, you know, that could be potential in case, you know, we just never know what the future holds. So I think it's probably wise to do that.
I completely agree with you. Speaking of like being a mother, a family of entrepreneurs, it sounds at this point, right? You and your husband are all in, your kids are probably involved in the business somehow. Like there's just around it all the time.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a blessing. It also comes with challenges, I'm sure, where maybe shutting it off or maybe, I don't know. What are the challenges? How has that experience for you been since you guys are like full-time entrepreneur family?
Yeah.
It can't all be perfect. And it's not all this amazing, all sunshine and rainbows type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely has its challenges. I think that over the years, we've kind of, and we're still learning how to sort of compartmentalize a little bit, because when you work from home, especially if your whole family is home, we did have 1 year where we homeschooled the kids. Thankfully, now they're in school. But when the year that we homeschooled, we were literally all home every day, all day together. And it was just, it was very hard for me to be able to, like, when I needed to film or something, like I needed quiet, I didn't really have a space that I could go into to get away from everything and do that. And so that was a really hard year of trying to figure out how do we compartmentalize a little bit. So like, I have my work time, I can like have this amount of hours from this time to do this. He has his time to do this. It is a little bit easier now that our kids are in school. So we've figured out a little bit how with just the two of us home, we can kind of like get things done separately and then together when we need to. Time blocking has worked really well for me. So I'm not really the type of person that works well on like a very strict schedule. And I don't think probably most of us creatives like to work that way. But I do need some kind of routine and some kind of like normalcy to feel like everything's okay. And so I've really relied heavily on time blocking like week by week. So my weeks don't even look all the same, but I'll like at the start of the week, I will just look at the week and figure out what my top priorities are for that week and figure out like times I can get those done. And so it's just kind of been, I mean, I'm definitely not even arrived with that yet. It's still challenging.
Sure, it's a journey.
But yeah, I think it's overall, it's a blessing. When I get stressed out about it, I just think about, man, it could be so much worse. Like I'm so blessed to be able to work at home on my schedule with my husband here, you know? And so that overwhelms the stress most of the time, but it is definitely challenging.
Yeah, it's very, and just for context for everybody listening, Kate and I already talked about this, but you have a 16-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
What would you recommend? Like personally, there's a lot of people listening to this right now, specifically talking about the moms here, that they have maybe a few kids under 5.
Yeah.
And they're listening to this. That means they're entrepreneurial. Yes. They're having an Etsy shop, or maybe they're just starting one, or they want to. They financially, it's a struggle. already. They're already, let's just say they, let's just make some assumptions. They're struggling maybe financially as a household. They going into this entrepreneurship game because they want to change their life financially, freedom, time freedom, give themselves more options. How do they figure out, in your opinion, how to time block, or what kind of strategies should they be using when they have, let's say, two kids under five?
Yeah.
How much time should they be investing into their business? All that good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think that your business definitely looks different depending on the season of life that you're in. So I would never advise someone that's in, you know, when your kids are older or even out of the house, the same way that I would advise a mom who has two young kids under five. You know, it's just totally different. I was in that position when I first started. And so I know how that feels. And I know how stressful and hard it can be, especially when you have another job or two that you're working. And so at that point, I always just encourage people, look at the season of life that you're in and don't put more pressure on yourself than you have capacity for. Your business doesn't have to look like anyone else's. So not comparing to other people's businesses, especially when you're first starting and you're comparing to businesses that have been around for years and years. It's just not going to do any good, the comparison part of that. So look at what you can do, what your capacity is for now. So that might look like, I have an hour when my baby's napping that like I have an hour free, you know? So what do you normally do during that hour? Is it something where you could sacrifice a little bit just for this season? And maybe you would normally just kind of watch a TV show or something during the hour, but could you just take that hour and work on creating a few designs, depending on what, you know, you're wanting to do, but like do something that would move the needle with your business a little bit, even if it's just for that 1 hour or an hour or two after the kids go to bed at night. I think a lot of times we say, well, I don't have any time, you know, and I'm guilty of that too. I say that a lot, but then when I really look at what I'm doing during the day, how much time I'm scrolling social, you know, if I were to get really focused and even sacrifice a little bit, and I'm not talking about sacrificing like huge things, but the little things I could sacrifice, like an hour here or there, I can sacrifice the time I spend scrolling or cut that down a little bit to have time to work on my business. Knowing that it won't always be that way, right? It can be discouraging if we're thinking, well, now I'm stuck in this business and I'm going to have to just like never have any free time again. And that's not true. There is like a foundation laying period of growing a business where it may feel like that. It's like the hustle, the grind, you got to like get things done. But it's wise to do that so that you're building this business so that later in a different season, like a year or two down the road, you can have some free time. And at that point, you'll probably have more financial flexibility. You know, it's like we're building for the long run. And so it's worth sacrificing and giving up a little bit of time in the beginning, while also not putting so much pressure on yourself for it to look like somebody else. If all you have is an hour a day or a couple hours a week, like that's what you have, you know, so there's total grace and to realize what season of life you're in, and just to do what you can do.
That's golden. Thank you for sharing that. I completely agree with all that, but it's very important for it to hear from your perspective because you're a mom and I'm not a mom.
Yeah.
And I can't even try to speak on this. I will say though, from a husband perspective, that the alignment with your spouse on your goals or your dreams, or maybe your ambitions, even if they're just like at their beginning stage, mm-hmm. are so important. Like the idea that you have this dream that you have for your shop or for your Etsy business or something like that. I want to encourage people to share that dream with your partner, because they can now dream with you and they will kind of see the point of how this whole thing can actually benefit the entire family. Whether it's, hey, Christina, my wife will come to me and she'll say like, I want to do this. I'm gonna work on the business tonight or today. I'm like, cool. Now that I'm totally on the same page, like I got the kids. So if they wake up after we get them down, I got them, you know, like you don't have to worry about anything. You're like, you literally try to shut it off. Even if that might not even be possible for a mom, but the idea is that that's your time. You focus for like 2 hours. The alignment between you and your partner is the most important thing, I would say, in this situation, especially when time is limited. It's golden, I would say. How have you guys been able to communicate through some of that stuff with your husband?
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a huge point, is that as much as you can to be in alignment. I know there's probably situations where some people have tried that and they're like, my spouse just doesn't understand. They're not willing, which is a different situation, you know, but if you are able to communicate, some people are just afraid to even like really share their dream with their spouse.
Interesting.
You know?
And yeah, that's true.
I think you might be surprised if you kind of jump out there and just share it and the reasons why, you know, and the fact that this has worked for people, it's proven to work and there's so much possibility and potential. I think about when I first wanted to get on YouTube. So we had been doing Etsy for several years and I wanted to get on YouTube and start helping people about Etsy, you know, through YouTube. Mm-hmm. But my husband didn't really have a huge concept of like what, you know, he knew YouTube, but he mm-hmm. didn't necessarily think like, he was like, why do we want to get on YouTube? Like we're doing fine on Etsy, you know? And I had to kind of present him with what I had found. Other people are having YouTube channels. They're helping, they're coaching people. And I think this could be really helpful for us to sure. reach a wider audience of people and sort of just explain to him and like help him a little bit, get on board with like, okay, we need to buy this sort of expensive camera, but it's an investment, you know? Like, and so thankfully he was willing to like get on board after, but I had to kind of like present him with like the possibility sure. and why I was convinced there was potential there, and he did get on board. So I think that it's your job as the spouse to kind of bring your spouse into it and lay out for them the possibility, the potential, why you feel like this could be a good thing. And even if you have sort of a hesitant spouse, it's like maybe you could set a time limit on it and say, you know what, if we could agree to just try this, like put everything we have into this for 6 months or a year, mm-hmm. like put a time limit on and say, if we don't reach this goal by this time, we'll go a different direction. I think sometimes when it's like, there's no end to it and it's sort of just this like floaty idea in your head and there's not a lot tangible to it, it can be hard for a spouse to like accept, well, this is just our life now, you know, with no end. So that could help too, is putting like a little bit of a deadline on it. And
saying, like we're going to sprint at this for 6 months kind
yes,
of thing.
Exactly.
And if we don't have any results or somehow like we lose steam completely, then we could reevaluate and pivot from there. I completely agree with that. Okay, this has been so impactful, probably for myself and also for other people listening to this. Where can people learn more about you?
Yeah.
Learn from you, connect with you, all that good stuff. Where can people find you?
So my website is a good place. That's kate-hayes.com. And then also I'm on YouTube, just my name, Kate Hayes. I'm on Instagram too. Pretty much all the places. So
beautiful. And by the way, if you're listening to this or watching this, we'll have all those links to Kate's stuff in description, show notes, all that good stuff. Kate, do you have a course? Do you have things that you can, like people can really, really learn from you?
Yeah.
I know we talked a little bit about other people that you're helping, but like, do you have something to literally help people if they're trying to get from A to B? Do you have something for that?
I do. Yeah. So probably the best thing would be, the first step is sort of like a free masterclass that I have. So I do have a full course that I teach. I have two different courses. One is specifically on Etsy growth, and then one is on how to start selling digital products online. But I have a free masterclass that is just like a 45-minute long class. It's probably a good like first step for people if they're wondering, like, should I kind of dip my toes into this a little bit? Is this for me? So probably that Etsy Success Masterclass. It's built on my 5-pillar framework, which is what I use to grow my shop on Etsy. And so I just kind of teach straight through that framework to give you some tangible, you know, tactics that you can use to grow your shop.
Awesome. It's probably it's a perfect starting ground to where if you're not sure what kind of products you want to sell, or if you don't know what niche you're going to target, or you don't know anything about anything yet, it's probably a perfect starting point. And it doesn't cost any money. So I'm sure I would definitely encourage people to go check that out.
For sure.
Kate, thank you again so much. Really, really appreciate you.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for having me. This has been such a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Same. We'll have to do it again, maybe in like 6 months or something like that. We'll have to get an update.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.